Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Reckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, March 29th, 2013. Carla L. Reckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Reckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim. Doing all right today?
Yeah,
hey, girl.
Doing good.
Okay. Well, I hear you got some good news. You finally got your surgery date scheduled. That's great.
We are so stoked. We're very happy about that. To be able to settle it, you know, in our minds and prepare for it and visualize it and know that it's soon going to be behind us also. It's going to be on the 9th. It's going to be at noon, so they're going to have us there at the crack of dawn practically, just to make sure that if there are any odd blood tests, that they have a chance to see them and respond to them before surgery. So they're being very careful, but I think everything will go perfectly.
Okay, well, I sure hope everything goes wonderfully, and I'm glad you're finally getting that done. Okay, so that means we will have one more show next Friday the 5th, and after that, we're just going to see how it goes, but we'll definitely be out for at least a couple of weeks until Carla recuperates. So one more show next week. So anybody got any questions, please get them to us ASAP. And we do have, you know, normally we go to our opening riff, but I'm going to go ahead and bring in our live caller from 860. Are you there?
Hi there.
Hi, who's this?
Susan calling from Connecticut.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I just want to know if anything is coming up for me or what comes up for me. Because I started writing, like automatic writing. And
well, that sounds wonderful. I'm not a psychic, but I'd say that if you're starting just spontaneously to get some automatic writing, then I'd really respect that. I'd take some time every day and sit down and just see what wants to come through. And before you do that, always focus on your very highest and best, whatever you believe in, whatever mm-hmm. your faith is. Spend some time in prayer. And then see what wants to come through for you. And your own intelligence is going to come through for you. You're going to find out for yourself what's going on.
Neat.
Good luck with that.
That's really neat. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks for calling in.
All right.
We will go ahead and go to the opening riff. This, unless you guys had any other announcements or anything?
Well, just one. We are not.
Okay.
And whoever put that up, that we do psychic readings, is they should be ashamed of themselves. We have people expecting more than we can possibly give. But, you know, a lot of times when people ask, there is something I can say, so it really doesn't matter.
Well, I think it's probably more likely just to mix up with the phone numbers, because this has happened 2 weeks in a row where people calling in thinking that this is a, you know, ask a psychic line or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think they got us mixed up. Okay, this is from Kuo from March 24th, 1996. To be truest to the self, it is well to reckon with that self, and doing so on a daily basis is recommended. The key in balancing is the remembrance of the larger viewpoint, and it is a skill which is good to work on to develop the ability to see the self from that higher perspective, which sees the whole range of the human comedy, as this instrument would say. Now, this large viewpoint does not come easily to most, and that is the challenge to each, to so live that one is bearing witness to one's truth, knowing that that truth is in process and will not stay the same, for each entity will grow along the lines desired most deeply.
I want to wish everybody Good Friday, and in respect to the most holy of Fridays of the church year for Christians, I would begin by sharing my own faith, which is that in my deepest, largest viewpoint, I am heir through hope of Jesus the Christ, his daughter, and the daughter, therefore, of the Creator. So my viewpoint is that I am part of the Creator. I take myself very seriously. I don't think that someone else or any other power is going to take care of me. I sometimes feel as if I am being taken care of. I think that's a very true feeling. But what I mean is that it is up to us. It is up to how we live our life, how we marshal our thoughts, how we express ourselves to ourselves when nobody is listening but ourselves, that will form for us the life that we are experiencing and that we will experience in the future. If we think, well, what I think doesn't matter because I'm unworthy and I'm just going to throw myself upon the mercy of Jesus or of the Buddha or of my guru or whatever, and move into heaven on that entity's coattails, more or less, because what in the world could I possibly do to do that for myself? I think that that is entirely incorrect. The way I see it, that's just not true. It's the dogmatic truth of the Christian church, and I know that I make people uncomfortable sometimes when I say that my belief is that, although I am definitely very much in love with my beautiful Jesus, although I worship the Creator with every fiber of my being and wish only to be a servant in its house, still, I know that I and only I am responsible for that vibration of self that, when I die, will meet the Creator. That essence of self is what will remain of me. And when I greet the Creator, it will be vibrationally. It won't be because of a certain set of words or because of a certain dogmatic belief. It will be how I am, how I vibrate. It's really hard to express this because we always think of ourselves in terms of, well, what have you done lately? And I think of that myself. What have I done lately? It's important to all of us. We check ourselves off. Well, have I done anything on the computer? Can I see where I've been today? Can I write something down to let somebody know what I've done today? Or have I just sloughed the day off and not really thought about other people and just took a day off. I mean, what have I done today? So we always think like that, and I don't think it's entirely wrong. But in the essence of things, it's not what we do, it's how we are. And how we are is made up of our thoughts, especially the thoughts that keep repeating and repeating. Do we think again and again, oh, I'm unworthy? Do we think again and again, oh, I'm so angry? What emotion pulls us away from our open-hearted peace? What takes away our peace? When you sit down at the end of the day, it helps a whole lot in terms of your knowing yourself to ask yourself that question. What has cut up my peace today? And when you look and see what has done that, then you can ask yourself, well, where have I seen this emotion before? Have I seen this before? Is this pretty regular for me? Is this repeating? And if you see especially that it is a repetitive emotion, those are the good ones. Those are the ones you really want to get after and balance. And by balance, I don't mean that you get rid of them. I mean that you take them in hand. You own them. Okay, this is what I've been thinking. And then you let yourself think it even more and more. If you were angry with someone, you let yourself be more and more intense in that anger. And finally, when you think you've gotten about as intense as you can without doing harm to somebody, you stop that. And you allow, you back off, and you go for the wider, more spacious viewpoint, and you allow the opposite of anger to come in. We pretty much know what the opposite of anger is. The opposite of anger is love. You know, and anger is a way of separating ourselves from another person. Love is a way of connecting ourselves to the other person. So we start looking at love. We start feeling forgiveness and love and compassion. And we let those feelings grow more and more intense until you're just full, absolutely full of that wonderful vibration of love and compassion. And then you hold them together in your mind, the anger and the love, the separation and the union. And you see that you are both things and that you always have the choice of which one to express. You're not a victim of your emotions. If you do this enough times, the next time you become angry, it may well be that you start into the balancing process before you even have a chance to get good and angry. You've started to get to know yourself, and you go, here I go again. I know this. This is where I separate from such and such a person or such and such a situation. And this is where I want to call on my ability to feel compassion and love. We have so many things that hurt us, and those are the things that we need to dig up, just as if we were miners, and we are looking at our consciousness as if it were a gold mine, and we're mining for those treasures of hidden pain so that we can dig them up, hold them up to the light of day, brush all of the detritus off of them and get them all spiffy. Okay, here it is. This is the gem. This is it right here. And then forgive yourself for being that angry person. Once and for all, clear that away. Allow it to become balanced with love. Allow the realization of yourself that you are both things to become powerful within you so that you forgive yourself completely for being an angry person or whatever it is that you've dug up at the end of the day when you're contemplating your life. When Easter comes, it's so wonderful to meet that Easter having confessed all of our sins, if you will use that language of Christianity. It's so wonderful to find all those pieces of anger and jealousy and greed and covetousness and all of those things that we read about when we're listing the seven mortal sins and so forth. And to realize before Easter comes that while we are those things, we have confessed them all, and we have chosen to express not discord but union, not hatred but love. As St. Francis said, and as I'm sure Pope Francis is thinking today, that beautiful prayer of St. Francis, make me an instrument of that peace. That's what we want to do, to be true to ourselves, to reckon with ourselves. The Kuo group, which Ra's a part of, suggests that we do this on a daily basis. I think it's a good idea. In fact, it's a good idea if you don't really feel that you have the time to do it as a formal thing at the end of the day, to do it on the run, to spend a little time when you're in the car going over things that have happened to you since the last time you had a little moment to contemplate, and just keeping up with it that way. Because it's so kind and generous to yourself to do this. When you can cleanse yourself of these adhering dark feelings, when you can come to your Maker whenever that happens, rejoicing and feeling happiness and peace instead of feeling burdened with difficulty and suffering and pain and shame. How wonderful that is. What a beautiful thing that will be for you. What a glorious gift to give to yourself. It is a human comedy. And we can learn to laugh as well as cry. And most of all, we can step back from our own drama and let it become a really good situation comedy, of which we are, of course, the star. Nikki, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that was wonderful, right?
Well, thanks,
okay.
Nick. I knew that was one of your favorite riffs. Jim is always trying to encourage somebody to do the balancing because he's found it helpful in his life.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Oh, I have too. And I know I've asked you this before, but I'm going to ask it again. What if when you're doing that balancing after getting down into the so-called negative emotions, you have a difficult time getting into that place of love and forgiveness? Any suggestions on that?
You can plant a little seed of that thought there. I mean, we all know what love and forgiveness feels like. We've had it for other people. We've experienced it from other people for ourselves. So if you feel like you're getting stuck down there in the negative part, imagine a moment, or just remember a moment, that you felt love and forgiveness or received love and forgiveness, and let that be a little seed, and then let it go and let it grow.
So even if you can't... Go ahead.
If you're a Christian, you can remember what Jesus said, you know, he who is without sin cast the first stone. I think when we get into dark emotions, we are in the situation of casting that first stone. And just that, what he said brings us back into contact with the part of ourself that is connected to being an instrument of peace instead of an instrument of darkness. I think if you look at it long enough, it will release back into its opposite, just like if you look at the sun long enough and then you blink and look away for a minute, you're going to see the opposite. You're going to see that sun, but it's going to be a dark sun. You know, that you'll see that little spot. Have you ever done that? Looked right at the sun for a while and
oh, yeah.
Close your eyes and, well, there's that sun. And I think if you get immersed in that feeling for a while, And then look away, step back, you know, do the equivalent of closing your eyes. You're going to see the complementary or feel that complementary color, that complementary emotion. And then it's a matter of encouraging it. There's always that little spark of it there. And it's a matter of not becoming so overwhelmed that we are unable to pull ourselves back to the larger viewpoint. There has to be a little part of ourselves that is ready to pull back to the more spacious viewpoint. I know you have asked this before, and I don't have a really good answer because it's always worked for me, and that doesn't help. This flat doesn't help, except that I can assure you that it does work. If you work this thing long enough, it'll work for you.
Well, I've done it a number of times, like if it's anger towards another person, it's always worked beautifully. I never really had any trouble with issues with other people. It's when it was anger at myself, that's when I had a difficult
That's
problem.
Always the hardest. I think that,
yes.
You know, we can forgive other people of the most heinous crimes, and we look at ourselves and we are the strictest parent you ever saw in your life. We don't forgive ourselves one iota. We're going to get our, you know, see just how bad we really are, you know, and of course that's not true any more of ourselves than it was of the person that we forgave that's not
mm-hmm.
ourselves. But
mm-hmm.
it just feels so different. It feels as though if we really do forgive ourselves, then it's almost as though we're letting down the old family guilt, you know, and that guilt is important.
Yeah, so then I was wondering, well, gosh, did I make it worse since I wasn't able to really pull into the positive?
I wonder, you know, when I get back to channeling after this operation is over and I'm no longer taking pain medication, that's going to be something I'd really like to ask, because I would love to hear what they would have to say, you know, channeling would have to say to that. I'll try
okay.
to be sure and put that to them.
All right, we actually have another live caller, so I'm going to go ahead and get them on with us. Hi, are you there?
Hi, Monica. This is Emmanuel, or Adonai One from the forum.
Oh, hey. Hi, how you
yeah.
doing? I'm so glad you called.
I'm doing well. I just wanted to comment. I may have came a little late from the discussion. I apologize if I'm breaking things up a little bit. But on the forgiveness front, you know, like if we find ourselves hard to forgive ourselves for certain things, I mean, what I've learned to do is just accept I can't forgive myself at this current time and to love the current state as it is. Is that an appropriate way to treat such things, you know? I mean,
well, that sounds like a good way to deal with it until such time as we can get a little further and, you know, and take a step back, yes. Just loving ourselves while we're there gives us that space.
I mean, I find it as if we're always fighting ourselves, if we're always pushing and pushing, trying to balance ourselves, that's only causing more disharmony. I think that's kind of like, it's kind of inverse to what we want to accomplish. I mean, I just
that's
want
what
Monica
was saying. So did
well,
you have a question?
I apologize. I can't, it's breaking up a little bit, but... I'll just repeat what you said again. I'm sorry.
Oh, did you have a question?
I just wanted to ask about that on that front. Is that acceptable? And I guess it is, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's,
all right.
Whatever we do in our effort to become more accepting of ourselves is going to be good. I don't think we can make our situation worse. We can kind of overwhelm ourselves with the feeling of being angry or whatever it is that we're trying to balance, and you think, oh my gosh, have I made it worse? But I think that your one's intent is so important that if you go into it intending to balance yourself and to become a more loving person even to yourself, that even if you don't feel like you've made it, you've started out, you've made the attempt, and I think that counts for a whole lot. Probably 90% out of 9 out of 10, I'd say.
I see. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate what you do so very much. It's I love listening to the show, and it's a gift every Friday. I love you guys.
Thank
spread
you
such wonderful wisdom.
Oh, God bless you. Right. Feels really good. We've been getting some calls lately by people who thought we were somebody else. It's a very humbling thing. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. We're not going to be able to help you as you wanted. I've always envied people who are psychic because I just don't have that gift at all. You know, I can channel, but that's not the same thing as having these psychic intuitions about people. I really don't. I just believe whatever people say.
Well, in some ways it is kind of similar because a lot of psychics, what they do, as Ra mentioned this in the channeling, they directly link up to the Akashic Records and they bring files out from there and they bring it out as a psychic reading. But for people to actually do that, it's kind of rare. But I can see why people could mix it up. But, yeah, I'm sorry it's been happening to you guys. I just saw it and I kind of cringed a little bit the first time that happened and the show started. So, yeah.
Well, it's good. It's good. It's a good way to keep humble and to stay loose and not worry about things.
Yeah. Well, you guys take care. Goodbye.
Thank you so much. God bless. Monica, what you got next on your docket? Do we have Monica?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
I
thought maybe we'd lost you.
No, I was trying to figure out how to unmute him, or mute him, rather.
Here
we go.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, I looked at the instructions one time, and I thought, I'm so glad Monica's doing this.
Okay. Actually, the next question you partially answered already, and maybe you could elaborate a little bit more. This is from Last Breath. Since we're on the subject of Christianity and your personal faith, Last Breath says, I would be interested to hear Carla discuss esoteric Christianity and maybe discuss some of the allegories and symbolism in the gospel or even the Bible in general.
Okay. Well, esoteric Christianity has the same relationship to dogmatic or outer Christianity that Kabbalah has to the regular Jewish faith. Not a lot. When I was talking about the Western white ritual magic and saying that the most common example of a white magical ritual was our Holy Eucharist, Monica was blown away because she said, well, gosh, you know, I was raised Catholic and I had hundreds of times where I went through that and nobody ever told me, even though I can see it, you know, from the way the ritual is structured, I can see it from the rite itself as to what's happening now that you mention it, that nobody told me that this was happening. Nobody told me that the priest was preparing himself to offer the body and the blood of Jesus the Christ, in spite of the fact that that's exactly what is said in the rite. It's always figured, well, you know, not really. But that is the design. And the design of the esoteric Christian has to do with the relationship between the self and the Creator, the self and God, or the self and Christ. It is not anything to do with one's relationship with other people, and has nothing to do with that. And if you hear somebody trying to explain esoteric Christianity, getting into, say, the kind of magical thing where if you do such and such, you're going to help heal somebody, or, you know, that is not the purpose for which esoteric Christians move into their magical work. And so you would need to back away if you want to stay purely an esoteric Christian. Back away from that and look more into the people that have written about the pure esoteric Christianity that is in the white ritual magic. People like W.E. Butler, Dion Fortune, Israel Regardi, people like that. Let's see. There is nothing but parable, really. When Jesus gives a story, he's trying to bring out things about your relationship, you know, the people to whom he is talking, their relationship with the Creator and with each other. The basis of Jesus' message is when he says, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, all thy strength, all thy will, and all thy might, something like that. That's not an accurate quote. And thy neighbor as thyself. On these two laws hang all of the Old Testament, all the law and the prophets. He does away with all of the Old Testament with that simple sentence. So when he's giving a parable, for instance, he says, when have you helped me in this life? And, you know, the disciples are looking very puzzled, and he says, he who visits the sick and those in prison are visiting me. If you clothe a naked person, you are clothing me. If you work to heal a person that's ill, you are healing me. It's a way of saying we are all one, but he's not just saying that you and he are one. He's saying that you and everyone else are related through him. Because you're his daughter, and because everyone else is his daughter or his son, we are each other's family. Not just in the way of, you know, the way people say things but don't really mean them. Jesus meant this quite literally. We are in each other's keeping. If we want to be Christians, his desire is for us to treat others as Christ. And by association, you can see he would also want us to treat ourselves as Christ. He would not want us to spend a lot of time kicking ourselves and blaming ourselves and focusing on what we did wrong. He would want us to be striving at all times towards doing our very best. And when we noticed that we had fallen from our own expectations, to pick ourselves up and shrug and do it again, and spend no time in self-pity or self-blame. That would not be something that Jesus would be interested in encouraging in his family. He wants a family that takes care of each other. Remember, from the cross, on this morning, he looks out at the disciples, and he calls two of them. Is it Peter and James? I can't remember the two right now. But he says, he nods over to Mary, and he says, son, behold your mother. Mother, behold your son. He is basically asking them to take care of her. He's going to be gone. He's not going to be able to see that she's got something to eat and a roof over her head. And so they simply take her in. And the image that Christ has is that of followers that come together, worship together, eat together, and love each other. Love each other as I have loved you. Do this in remembrance of me. Let's see another image that he uses. He uses the idea that the word is like a seed. He talks about faith as being, if you just had the faith of a grain of mustard seed. Now, mustard seed, you can hardly see it unless you have a microscope. It's so tiny. But although it's actually a bush, it grows so large that it looks like a tree if it's allowed to grow freely. So that's the way he sees faith working in us, is that it can transform us. It can be huge in us, that we simply have to have faith that it's there. And the mustard seed, does a seed have faith? You know, when you think about it, we would say, well, the seed must have some kind of huge faith because it grows to such a huge extent. But in actuality, the seed doesn't have the kind of faith where the seed is thinking at all. The seed's not thinking. The seed has a direct apprehension of its job. It knows what it's supposed to do, and its desire is to do it. And you plant it in any kind of soil, and it will do the best it can to grow so large that the bird will nest in its branches. Now, in another parable, he talks about the seed being tossed on all different kinds of soil. On some soil, you know, the soil is rich, and so it grows and thrives. In other soil, there's no, you know, it's on sand. It doesn't have any way to put down roots. Sometimes it's got a thin bit of soil, and it starts growing, but it doesn't have very much soil, so it falls over and can't grow beyond a certain point because there's not enough way to set root and so forth. So he's always using the things that are around us, the common things, to talk about the relationship between ourselves and the Creator and ourselves and each other and faith. Faith is the most important thing. Jesus truly wants us to be people of faith. He wants us to follow him. He wants us to see him not as himself, but as the Creator. I think some of the most misunderstood lines in the Bible are his, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." If you know what I am, that I am, is in the Old Testament, it's the name of God. So when he's saying, "I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life," Creator is the truth, the way, and the life. And focusing on the Creator brings us to the Creator. No one shall come to him except by me. So he's asking us, have faith. Focus on the Creator. Because I'm the Son of the Creator, and all that is his is mine. And all that is mine is yours.
Okay, thank you, Carla. Anything to add to that, Jim?
No, I don't think so. Thank you.
Okay.
Jim's a Christian. He just doesn't go to church much. he's not a voluble or a verbal Christian.
Well, priest that married us 25 or so years ago says, you know, you're really a spiritual pagan. The outdoors is your church. And I think you probably really do better there. And I'm not sure exactly how he pegged me there, but I think he got me pretty correctly.
Well, it's because I confess twice a year. That's how he pegged you.
You confess your sins or my sins.
He knows everything about you.
Well, I'd be pegged the same way, so definitely. Okay, I have a follow-up question. You mentioned earlier about how modern Christianity has gotten hold of this idea that, you know, Jesus did it all, so works don't matter. And I find that so true. I was brought up Catholic, and in Catholicism, it was your good works were emphasized a great deal. And then later, I became a born-again Christian for a while, and they taught your works don't matter. You can't earn your way to heaven. It doesn't really matter what you do. And of course, you know, they have good intentions. Their intention is that in Christ all things are done, and you just accept Jesus as your Savior, and you'll automatically be a better person. But of course, it doesn't always end up that way. And what ends up happening is, you know, a lot of times they're doing things that are, you know, maybe not so great. But it doesn't matter. I've got my ticket, you know. So what do you think? Do you have any thoughts on what the repercussions of that is? I mean, has Jesus' teachings been really, you know, corrupted? I mean,
well,
are
yes,
they really?
They have. As far as I'm concerned, the simple answer is yes. I think if when you think about church, you either feel guilty or you feel judged. You either feel, you know, the Catholic upbringing is going to make you feel guilty. I mean, you're guilty to breathe. You can't live without being guilty. I mean, the whole concept of confession is based on the fact that by noon you've got something to confess every day, you know. And so, you know, you grow up and you feel obscurely guilty just for breathing. And that's really the biggest scar I see on people that come to our meditations that have been brought up Catholic, is that they have to get over the feeling of judging themselves constantly. And it's the opposite problem with fundamental Christianity, because they've got a black and white Christianity. There's no subtlety to it. This is either good or it's bad. It's either a done thing or it's a sinful thing. And so you know exactly what you're doing at all times. And the problem with that is you're bound to do at least one or two things that aren't on that list and that feel right to you. So, you know, you're feeling judged all the time. So it's another way of feeling guilty, or you're under the burden of judging everybody else and thinking, oh, my God, it's so sad. They're never going to make it to heaven. I've got to convert them so that they can come to heaven like me, because I want to be with them forever. And I've had this riff from my own brother, and it took a huge, you know, earthquake in our family for me to get him to stop doing that to me. For over 20 years, I just was trying to take it on the chin and try to be a Christian to him and not say much about it and just let him talk. But finally, it hurt so bad, I had to say, look, I'm just not going to be with you anymore, because you don't seem to be able to keep from doing this, and it's just unacceptable. And after a while, he figured out, you know, it is unacceptable. I shouldn't be doing this to you, thank God. But, yeah, I think that a lot of times we find usefulness in our Christianity in spite of the church rather than because of it, and I think that's an awful shame. Sometimes you'll find a very gifted preacher, and that preacher has somehow managed to wend his way through all of the difficulties that dogma can bring one way and another. And he preaches love, he preaches forgiveness, he preaches what's in the Bible. And he refrains from being an Old Testament preacher with doom and gloom and a lake of fire being at the end of it for 90% of everybody. But it's rare. It's very rare. It's much more rare than it should be, I'm afraid. I love the church, and when the preaching is bad enough, I have changed from one church to another so that I could preserve my faith. And it's a wonderful thing to worship with a congregation of believers. It's just past telling, that experience of feeling the connection of everybody worshiping with you. And I would hate to do without it. And at the same time, I do see how many, many people Christianity has given pain to. And I hate to say that, but it's true.
With Easter coming up, I really got to ask this question, and I apologize for not letting you know before the show, so I hope you don't mind this spontaneous question here. But in light of what we know from Ra about Jesus being a wanderer here on a very special mission, and many of us also being wanderers with different missions, and in light of what we know about the mind-body-spirit complex, do you personally believe that Jesus really did rise from the dead, as we've been taught?
Well, it's a possibility that I wouldn't discount. I believe in miracles, and I believe that he was undoubtedly perfectly capable of doing so. However, I know how myth winds itself around anything having to do with anything that's happened in the past. I mean, there are things in my life in the past, and I hear them coming out of somebody else's mouth, and they've already been mythologized to a certain extent, and it's the truth has been embroidered to the point where I almost don't recognize that it happened to me. You know, the story's been made better. I don't know. I have seen a lot of channeling where that it suggested that Jesus did in fact come down from the cross you know, certainly not himself after all that punishment, but alive and escaped and went to India and spent the next 20 years there teaching. I also read the Bible and know that people of faith said that they saw him. You know, the story in John, is it John? It's in one of the Gospels of the road to Emmaus where Jesus somebody comes, a stranger comes and he talks to them and they're talking about the Gospels and all of these wonderful, you know, the Gospels are being made clear to the disciples. And it suddenly hits them finally during dinner. Did our hearts not burn? Was this is Jesus the Christ. Oh, my heaven, we were sitting there breaking bread with Jesus. You know, so that has the quality of truth. It also has the quality of myth. I have to say, I don't know and I don't care. I do not care because what matters to me, what makes me a servant in his house until the moment of my death, and so glad to be able to say that, is the love in his eyes. He truly, truly believed that he could die for our sins and they would be forgiven. And he was willing to take that on. He loved us so much. And that love is something that is so precious to me. And I feel that I have that total contact with his love. And I want to be a servant of his love. And if I can serve him and his love, if I can be someone who can express that love, however faintly, however poorly, then I am satisfied. So it's a very unsatisfactory answer, but it's honest. I honestly don't know, and I haven't ever cared enough to try to figure it out.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent answer because that's how I feel. I really don't. To me, it's not important. To me, what's important is his example of perfect love.
Yes.
And so now the part you said about dying for our sins, that's that part I've had a little trouble with. You know, I don't understand that concept.
Dying for our sins?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
it was part of
his
culture, so, you know, it stayed a part of our culture. And I don't think that it's one of those truths that can be taken literally. I think we all die for our own sins, but I think we all redeem ourselves from them also because of our intent. I think it's so important in this life to create intentions for ourselves, not to just drift through life, but to set our intention every morning of what we want to do that day. You know, I set my intention to serve you today, Lord. I set my intention in, I see this coming up today at 10 o'clock. I've got an appointment. I set my intention here to carry love into the situation and to stay unified with this person. And, you know, really be conscious, live consciously and set intentions. And will we make all of them? Well, no. I'm afraid not. We won't make them all. You know, we're dodos. And what's the we're all bozos on this bus. That's the one I always go back to. I love that saying. But we try. And the important thing is that we try. And we never fail to pick ourselves up and try again. We never lose faith.
Thank you, Carla, for sharing all that. We have just enough time for one last question. I'm going to go to Jocelyn's question, and I know she's asking about specifics, and I know you're probably going to answer in a more general way, but I think it'll still be very worthwhile to address this. Jocelyn says, hello, Carla, you are a very nice person. My English is not so good, but I want to ask you about my son, Jonathan. He passed away on February 21st. He was my only son, and I want to know where he may be now. What happens after his death? He had a problem with drug addiction, but was a lovely person. Probably he died because of using drugs. A month before he died, he told me he wanted to die. He was in a detox clinic for a month, and I knew he wanted to die. His last day, he had the opportunity to buy drugs, and he did it. But during that day, he was so happy and said he wanted to live. The next morning, he was found dead on his bed. I would like to know what happens with his soul. Thank you. This is from Jocelyn.
Well, Jocelyn, sweetheart, I'm so sorry for your loss. I know it's not a true loss, but it's always a loss when you lose your child and from the physical. And I just want to reassure you that he's fine. He is probably healing because he had a lot of conflict in his life, and he won't be walking the steps of light soon. He'll probably be healing for some time. It may be that you die and he's able to walk the steps of light with you. But when he's healed from this incarnation, what he'll do is he'll walk in light. He'll walk into more and more light, and at some point he'll stop walking because the light is too bright to go further. That light will either be in third density or fourth density. If it's in third density, he'll go to another planet, and he'll have another major cycle of incarnations in third density, just like now. That's the worst that can happen is that he continues living like he is now. The best that can happen is that he gets to graduate and go on to fourth density or wherever he stopped. He'll be in that density, and he'll be enjoying all of the benefits of being in the density of love and understanding.
And I want to add to that, Jocelyn, and I absolutely send love and blessings and hugs to you as well. Feel so much compassion for you for your loss. I want to extend that to you as well. Now, Carla, what I think she might also be asking here is, do you think there is any particular negativity associated with the fact that he was doing drugs? I mean, did that set him back somehow?
Oh. Well, I don't know. She said he was a lovely person. And generally when people say that, what they're saying is that he was a nice person. He was good to other people. He would give you the shirt off his back. That kind of thing. That's what they mean when they say he was a lovely person. And if that's so, if he was focused on serving others, then he very likely will go on. He very likely will graduate. It's not what you do. It's not the drugs that you take or anything that you do. I mean, short of murder, obviously. But given that you're just doing it to yourself, it's not the event itself. The drugs are not the bad thing, although they're certainly an unwise thing. What is bad is how you act, how you feel, how you think. It's your thoughts that turn into the essence of who you are at the point that you die. That's what you take with you, not what you've done, whether you've done drugs or whether you've, you know, done this or that. It's what you were thinking. Were you thinking love of other people? Were you hoping that you could help? Did you spend time in contemplation? You know, how much time did you love? Were your thoughts of love? That's all that matters.
Okay. Thank you. And speaking of drugs, now one last follow-up question. This is from Last Breath, and we had addressed part of his question last week, and he has a follow-up. What place do you think mushrooms have in spiritual seeking? Do you think magic mushrooms could have been intentionally placed on the planet to give people this sort of one-time wake-up experience?
Well, I would never presume to guess why the Creator put anything on the planet. Why did he put things that poison people on the planet? You know, I don't want to go there. Do I think that mushrooms can be part of a spiritual experience? Absolutely. I know that the Native Americans of South America have rituals involving mushrooms, and they're sacred in their culture. I think that anything that's used with total respect for the sacredness of it and you know, aiming at an effort just to come closer to the Creator, there's certainly a lot of intention there that's good. My experience is that if you try to use drugs in order to get closer to the Creator, you're on a difficult path because the drugs may get you close to the Creator, but you can't sustain it when you're sober and you're going to leave this life and walk the steps of light completely sober. So I think it's really best that we stay sober when we're working on our spirituality. But that's my opinion, and I don't mean to get in the way of somebody that wants to have an experience with magic mushrooms.
Okay. We just have a couple of minutes left. Any follow-up, Jim?
I would agree with Carla. I don't know if there's any way of saying why the Creator put one thing or another here. They're all, everything that's here on the planet is something that we can use as a tool for our growth. And I think our intentions are the most important thing. When you're in the West, as we are, and you attempt to follow some other culture's traditions or rituals, the use of peyote or magic mushrooms or anything like that, mind-altering drugs, it kind of is difficult for us because we're not raised that way. We haven't got the foundation built in our own character structure. So I think we kind of take a risk that those people in the cultures that practice this regularly do not take. A lot of what happens when you use drugs is the setting of the mind, the expectation of the mind is something that helps to guide the journey for you. And if you don't know exactly what you're going to get into, what you're expecting, or how to prepare for it, then you're sort of in a very fast car that you're not really sure you know how to drive. And so sometimes we get through luckily, and sometimes we don't get through so luckily. So I would agree with Carla that if we're going to follow our spiritual journey in the most efficient way possible, we need to be more conscious and sober as to what we're doing and to do it with conscious intention.
I think you brought up some very astute points there, Jim, about the culture and the context in which the drugs are being partaken of. We have a follow-up in the chat room from Keikoa. I hope I'm saying that right. Says, love this show. Been following Lightline's research for years. Love you guys. Read all 5 of the books and was blessed, definitely. Has a question. I have a follow-up to the previous question. How could a drug addict graduate to 4D without another 3D incarnation? Isn't it necessary to express that you've learned certain lessons to graduate to 4D?
Well, yeah, it's very necessary that you express that you have learned to love other people and that you have learned to love the self. And who am I to say that Jocelyn's son was not totally loving of others and of himself, and that he just liked being high in the careless, thoughtless way that a young person will take or huff or ingest or imbibe or stick himself full of, whatever, you know. I think that what we take, how we act and so forth, the reason the people say don't do that, it's really good advice, but I think in terms of strict spirituality, what you're looking at when you're looking at what the Law of One suggests is the elements of judging. You're judging yourself on how you vibrate. Do you vibrate with the same love that the Creator vibrated? And I'm not about to say that it's impossible to take drugs and also vibrate in total love. I think that somebody that isn't thinking clearly could do both.
Well, yeah, I mean, it could be any drugs, not just, I mean, probably a good percentage of the population takes drugs, not
just.
Yeah,
what about nicotine? What about caffeine? What about alcohol? All of those are drugs of choice. What about sex? Sexual addiction is very prevalent in this society. There are so many addictions, and there are so many ways that people duck out of judging, and then they want to judge other people when the drugs that those people are using are not the drugs that they use.
Well, and then all the legal prescription drugs too. I mean, there's a big part of the population that's taking drugs.
I know.
I mean, how do you define drugs?
I've been on pain pills for a couple of years now with this fist long hole in my back from an operation that won't heal, and it hurts. You know, the drugs are there for a reason.
Right.
And and they cost like $6 for 90 of them. I know they're so cheap, it's incredible. And if I wanted to sell them on the street, they're like $60 a piece.
Whoa.
It's just incredible. And, you know, somebody told me that one time, and I'm thinking, wow, I can't believe it. But, I hate this stuff because I have to take it. And as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing glorious about it at all. But There you go. It's just all in how you think. So I'm very loose as far as judging somebody else for what he takes or what he.
Well, then you're living proof that, people that can take drugs can certainly still have an open heart. So we certainly.
There you go.
I mean, if that was,
on
that
note.
If that was a prerequisite, man, we're all lost then in that case. But, okay, we are definitely out of time. Keikoa, we're going to have to keep your last question for next time, okay?
Okay.
Just come back and be with us again next week. We will have one more show next Friday, which is April 5th. We are normally here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. You've been listening to In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Check out llresearch.org and bringforth.org. That's bring the number 4th.org. One more show next week, and then we're going to be off for a couple of weeks while Carla has her surgery. So you can submit your questions at bringforth.org for the show. You got one more show until we take a break. Okay, everybody have a happy Easter if you celebrate Easter or whatever you celebrate, and we'll see you next week.